All right, guys, welcome to today's episode of the David J. Sherwin podcast. I'm here with a good friend of mine who I've known for some time, who we've kept in touch. I've kept in touch with Brian, who's introduced me to a lot of different ideas, and that I'm really glad that I was able to reach out to him and connect with him. One of the ideas that he brought to me that I had very little knowledge about was something called the Earthship Homes, and I found that to be extremely interesting. And I know it's not just that Brian, as far as what Brian knows about, I know he's deep into spirituality, meditation, and he can definitely go a lot deeper into it than I can. So that's why I'm excited to have him on today's show. So welcome to the show, Brian. How are you doing today?
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me on. How's the quality of hear everything okay?
Yeah, it's good.
Coming through?
Yeah.
All right, okay. Yeah, it's good to see you. We finally did this.
Right.
We've been talking about it for about a year, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. It definitely took me some time to sit there and just try to think about how to actually put it all together. It's like a giant puzzle piece. Like, even just now, before I started talking to you, I'm like, I gotta press this button. But it's cool, man. It's like, it's one of those gifts of sobriety that you get, you know, where like once you have a fully functioning brain, kind of, you don't have any limits of as far as what you can do. So,
yeah, when we met, I think we were talking about the niacin therapy.
Yeah.
That treatment that, they came up with for depression.
Right.
And, severe psychiatric diagnosis.
Right.
And, that was kind of my experience that I wanted to share with you, is that it works. You know, it really, really works. I've done dozens of different methodologies for trauma. You know, I tried all kinds of different drugs, different medications, different prescription drugs, psychiatric drugs, you know, and I was diagnosed with a severe case of PTSD and some other psychiatric diagnoses that were horrific, you know, and given a full documented disability, a diagnosis. I get into it really on my page, but, you know, I was told that I was bipolar, schizophrenic, and that I would never work again, would never be able to work. I wasn't expected to ever get well, not expected to get better, only expected to get worse. And as of a year and a half ago, I was working hand in hand with the Israeli Ministry of Health as a life coach to help people to detox from psychiatric medication.
Huh.
So there's a lot of treatments out there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think it's crazy, like, what kind of difference, like when you think of treatment, like for myself, I always think of like before I actually got treatment, you know, I always thought like, oh, the first thing they're going to do is put me on this and that. But like treatment, it just really depends on the person. I think for me personally, like meditation is so important that like without it, especially now, I have no clue how I'd be functioning like I am right now. And especially like with how chaotic everything seems, it just seems like more and more important to ground yourself and make sure you're taking care of your mind. I think people who like to exercise a lot, and this is like one of the reasons why I used to work out all the time. Like that was like all I did. And then like one of the things that like I neglected to really take care of, I think, was my mind itself. And I was abusing alcohol, obviously, but I think that coming back and looking back on all of it, just to kind of see how beautiful the world is without destroying yourself over whatever it is you might be thinking that's horrible. It's crazy. So, so you said you were doing some meditation in some different areas. Do you want to get into that at all as far as where you've been, how you're doing it exactly?
Sure. Yeah, the Kabbalistic meditations are very good that I learned in Israel, specifically the mikvah, the Merkava meditations, the chariot. It's just about building an energy field, a light field around the body. It's basically to protect from all sorts of vulnerabilities. So there's a certain limitation to what we can do when it comes to armed conflict or viruses or, you know, any other kind of attack that we're vulnerable to. But when we work on our energy field, it kind of resolves some of those issues.
Right.
It can protect us in ways that physical shields cannot. So that was something that's been very helpful, particularly semen retention, Qigong, Tai Chi, like I said, the Merkava stuff. You can research it. I'm not going to get into it too much right now, but it has to do with taking cold showers, cold baths, going from hot to cold, just kind of pushing your body to experience that. And specifically in the morning, getting up and dunking in an icy cold bucket of water, right, do something to wake yourself up and get active. Yeah. That was the main thing that snapped me out of my depression, because I was just so lethargic.
Yeah. No, you know what, actually? I took this course. It was about how to basically help your brain, like help your neural pathways perform better. And I started learning about the whole dopamine receptor deal, the whole reward system and how your brain works. And it was talking about how the more you exercise, like the healthier your brain gets. But then there was somebody else who I was listening to. I forget his name, but he was on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he was talking about how to strengthen your neural pathways. And one of the ways that they bring up is through like cold showers, because it, I guess, shocks your system sort of, which I've been doing. And like, I felt like I feel so much better. Like I could definitely tell like the difference in my energy. And right now, just with like what I'm doing between schoolwork, work, and this, it's like my energy being up is like, it's pretty important. Otherwise, you know, everything around me is just going to suffer for it. But that's been something that I've been like really paying attention to. And then something else that I was doing some research on my own, I kind of backed away from it, but I was looking at cryotherapy, and I've heard different opinions on it, where like some doctors are saying it's not worth it, and then some people are swearing by it. So plus the places that are around here that are doing it, they're charging quite a bit of money. I think it's like $300 a month for it, for like cryotherapy. So I might check out like the ice cold bath deal, see how those work, or whatever, and just do some more like shocking and trying to just wean myself off of like everything that's a cheap reward for myself without doing a lot of work for it. I think one of the other things that helped me out a lot too was I was playing a lot of video games like on my phone, and I've just totally cut it out completely. And it's crazy how much of a difference just doing that has made, where I can tell now if I open up the app, like all of these colors and stuff that are on the games or on the phone, it's just like, whoa. And then like you get sucked into it for a few hours, like 4 hours later, you're like, holy crap, I'm still playing. And I'm not like, I was playing Madden, and I'm not really a huge football fan, but I got pretty invested into that game. Like I spent money I definitely should not have spent on that game, for sure. But it's crazy how even just like cell phones can hook you into sort of almost an addictive state.
Yeah. So I'll go a bit deeper into my experience of the trauma. If it hopefully helps someone, I know there might be guys in the VA hospital or something that need to hear this. I worked with a whole team of trauma specialists on this, and many of them veterans of Yom Kippur War, tank commanders, things like that. There's something that happens in war, and it happens to children who are abused sexually at a very young age, called dissociative identity disorder, DID. And I've heard it also described as polyphrenia. There was a lieutenant colonel in the Army that did a lot of work on it after Vietnam, and he's been a big inspiration to me, James Channon. He had that diagnosis or condition as well. And what helped me to heal that was mapping and fusing my alters, because sometimes different personality states can take over when people have to go into like an adventure theater mode where they're playing different roles, wearing different costumes or whatever, different settings, different theaters of war, they have to shift. And those shifts become unconscious, and sometimes they take over, and then the different personality states begin competing with each other, and sometimes it can get very destructive because they're actually at war with each other, and then you have to figure that out. So that was important for me to learn how to heal. Worked with a Krav Maga instructor who's a forensic specialist, and we mapped it all out. And what I did was I put myself in the center of the host, and then I drew lines to all the different personality states that I was experiencing. And it was just as simple as connecting them all up on a piece of paper and looking at it. Then I could see that map, and I knew that the map was me, but it wasn't me. Like, the different parts were just different aspects of my personality that I developed to survive.
Right.
And I wasn't shifting involuntarily. They just integrated. It all integrated into one cohesive whole, like one cohesive unit. So now, I guess if I had to, I could still shift into any one of those, but at least I'm conscious of it and I can control it a little bit more. It doesn't take over me.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's interesting. I was doing some meditation, and I downloaded that Calm app, and it was one of the, they'll do themes where they'll talk about whatever, but one of the things that they were talking about was the idea of having two basically wolves fighting in your mind, and one wolf's like a bad that represents ego, selfishness, you know, whatever, and then there's a good wolf where it represents basically selflessness, caring, like all the good things that you'd want in a life. I guess that's good. And it talks about how you have to decide basically which wolf you want to win. And that, I mean, I don't know what the, I mean, I know there's like no real scientific proof from it, but I'm sure there could be. But she goes into talking about how if whatever wolf you feed is going to be the one that wins that battle, basically. So saying that, like, if you feed the good wolf or if you feed the bad wolf, you know, that one that you choose to feed is the one that comes out and wins. But it's definitely interesting to look at that and to, like, put a map out and kind of see it. And something else that, like, I've heard of that same idea with, like, the course that I took, where it's not like how you, I guess, exactly the way you did it, where it might be like something for things that you identify with yourself, but like you draw out like things that you want to go do. So it's basically like, it's still a map, but it's like, oh, say you want to go complete a college degree, you would write that down. Or if you want to go complete like some exercises or something, like you would draw it out, so then that way you can see it rather than kind of just being lost. And I like the idea of it. I haven't done it yet, but I think if you recommend it, I'll actually have to check it out and try it out and see how it works.
Yeah, that Coach Mark Devine talks a lot about that, feeding the courage wolf, in his podcast. I was just listening to one earlier today. And it is true, you know, the good wolf, the bad wolf, whichever one you feed the most is going to win. And techniques for that are, you know, writing down all of my fears and then just asking them to be eliminated, usually sharing them with somebody else. And right away, at the speed of light, they're usually taken away from me. And that's kind of how I kill the bad wolf or the fear wolf.
Yeah.
And then feed the courage wolf with, you know, good meditations and stuff. And that mapping and fusing the altars thing was a little bit different than like a deliberate life creation, kind of a vision board. It's more about healing a shattered mind, just somebody who's completely split off and schizophrenic, needs to do the diagnostic qualifications for schizophrenia.
Right.
That kind of a person who might have survived, you know, combat or IEDs or was, you know, sexually abused as a child, human trafficking survivor type of a case, they're going to have just a broken mind and a broken body and a broken soul, really, because that's what it does to people.
Right.
And it's different, but it works on the same principle. It absolutely works on the same idea of visualization.
Right. Yeah, I think the other thing too that helps, like it was kind of like it blew my mind yesterday. I was working on this calculus course that I'm taking, and there's this thing that they go into talking about. It's called like E to the X, basically, where no matter what E is raised to, no matter what power it's raised to, it's always one, which basically is saying that everything is relative to growth, basically, to how something grows. So for instance, say like for us in recovery, being around other people in recovery is actually extremely important, because you're like being around those people who are in recovery and growing is going to essentially rub off onto you. Whereas like if you're around people who are, I guess, still using, I mean, I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but the chances are pretty high and like pretty likely, where if you're surrounded in an environment that's toxic to your recovery and your growth, and that's going to have an effect on your growth. Where, and then like some other points that we're making, they were talking about how if you have basically a field of chickens, right, and you only have, say, two chickens, the growth on the other side, where you might put the ones that are bred onto the other side, is going to be relative to how many chickens you have, versus if you have 1,000 chickens and you're trying to breed a bunch more chickens, that the growth from that is relative to it, like always. And I thought it was pretty interesting to think about, but so pretty interesting. But I think that's like why I said I enjoy like our conversations, like the things that you've shared as far as like the Earthship homes. Like I was looking into it and I was like, man, this is like amazing. And I started getting ideas about it. I was like, this would be great for like the homeless population, because I feel like California has such an issue with it, obviously, but like something that would be self-sustainable, that wouldn't really require too much, I think, as far as maintenance, and kind of using that in a altruistic way to take care of people who are struggling. And I was talking to my wife about the idea, and I don't know. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, tiny houses for the homeless would be great. I can speak from my own experience that being homeless and trying to get a job and go to school and get housing when you're so far at a disadvantage to begin with, and you don't even have water necessarily to even brush your teeth, you know, never mind, or even to drink most of the time, never mind you know, take a shower and go to work. So showing up to do a job interview or showing up, you know, without having proper hygiene even taken care of and a proper night's sleep, it's pretty damn near impossible unless you have help like I did from family, friends, and things like that. I don't see how anyone can do it. And the shelters that are available they're pretty gross. I mean, you go in there and you're at risk of all kinds of infections, and there's airborne diseases. And like you said, we're dealing with COVID now. So yeah, to have earth tiny houses that are at least 6 feet apart with a good barrier up so that people can at least get a decent, nice sleep, and then kind of triage them
right
through there. And who's capable of maybe going back to work? Who's going to need to be in a place like this for the rest of their life? You know, who's definitely not supposed to be here, and we need to put them somewhere else, like the next level of care,
right?
Whatever that might be, you know, jail,
right?
Hospital. I don't know, but not there. And just don't leave people out in the street to die,
right?
Because that's un-American. This is downright un-American to do that.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think, and then like the other thing that I guess has been crossing my mind with, especially like what's going on in the news, you're reading about all this division in this country, and that we're, you know, seeing all of these reports going on with human trafficking and whatnot. And like you said, after going through something like that, it's devastating for the person who's having to deal with it. And from my perspective, I'm thinking like we have all of this animosity towards each other, and then we have this like serious issue going on. And I'm thinking with all that anger and stuff that people are putting towards each other over basically politicians who, in my view, like I can't get too political on this podcast for obvious reasons, but like I feel as though the anger and the focus, if it was focused somewhere else, where I think, for instance, that could probably have a pretty big effect. And I think it's crazy that it's still going on today. And I think that there's definitely a bunch of things that could be done about it, that I think we have the ability to do something about it. So that's why I like the Earthship idea as well, where if, say, you had somebody who, you know, built not even just one house, like, yeah, you'd build a house for just one person, but like I was thinking along the lines of like battered women's shelters, because it's kind of hard right now. I think depending on how you're doing it, like how would you systematically target like fixing the issue? And I think that was like where I was looking at it personally, was like taking care of like basically the people who are going to take care of, you know, the kids. I mean, you know, the men too, for sure. But I feel like doing it systematically, where it's like if you target kind of young, take care of them and give them a fighting chance, it kind of hopefully takes care of some of the issue, like the whole root cause analysis, where I think like family values are struggling. I think people have a lot of problems with that. Like I was struggling with it, especially with when I was drinking. When I was drinking, obviously, like I was the complete opposite person that I am now. But I think that trying to develop like strong family issues with people would definitely make a difference. So I don't know. I know I'm going off on a tangent a little bit down a rabbit hole in my head, but it's kind of just been an idea that I came up with after you showed me that. I was like, man, I was like, that is awesome. And I was doing some research on my own because I was learning about cryptocurrency for a little while on my own. And there are these things, they're called basically miners. They're these little GPUs or whatever. You hook them up and they're basically like loud washing machines that run nonstop that mine basically cryptocurrency. So I was looking, not like I didn't know specifically that somebody already had a name for that specific thing, but I was thinking about doing it on my own. I was like, I need land, I need solar power, and then maybe a tiny house to just do it. But I didn't realize somebody already had basically the blueprints to my idea already drawn up. So I thought it was pretty cool when you showed me it. But Yeah, so it was pretty interesting to think about, but I'm trying to not just, I guess, think about short-term gain things, I guess, where I'm at. I'm looking more along the lines of like what would I rather have, fame or respect? And I think that having respect is definitely more important for myself at this point, where I think some people think fame is extremely important and they'll sell their souls for it, but yeah. So, how long have you been looking at the whole Earthship home idea for?
Probably 20 years. I mean,
Really?
then yeah, you mentioned what to do about the problem. The problem is necessarily that human nature run amok with instincts and collision. And there are groups out there that are doing good work on it, like VPRCR, Veterans for Child Rescue, just partner with Anti-Predator Project. So there's a lot of guys out there that are doing the work to solve it. But then the question is, what do you do with the survivors? And that's where, getting in contact with nature again and having this sort of harmony through conflict experience where people have a safe place to go who've survived this kind of a thing. And a lot of these people deal with claustrophobia and stuff like that. So it's good for them to be outdoors and then to get grounded and be digging in the dirt and be part of the circle of life again, the whole,
Yeah.
feeling connected. You might not in a situation where you're so numb and broken that you don't trust human beings anymore, someone who's like a lone wolf kind of a situation, they're not gonna feel great about being around people, but they might start to want to be alive and appreciate life again if they
Right.
can really get connected to that circle of life by being outdoors and, feeding
Right.
animals every morning, getting up, feeding the sheep and the goats or whatever, and then eating the eggs and just experiencing, okay, the universe is a safe place, or sometimes it can be safe.
Right.
It's more benevolent than it is hostile. Then that person's not suicidal anymore. Then they might start to trust people again, and that's how you heal someone. So building these tiny villages is just, yeah. But
Yeah.
the Earthship just brings it all into like a complete,
Yeah.
sustainable structure that has all of that.
I think right now as well, like with this whole COVID thing and everyone's not sure of what's going on with the economy, I think now is like probably as important as ever to actually make sure we can get as many people taken care of with the fact that, we have record high evictions right now where people are getting pulled out of their houses for, not paying rent. And not being able to survive, I think having the healthiest population that we can get, even if this wasn't going on, but like now it would definitely help. But even if it wasn't going on, I think just the investment in the people, I think in the long run makes more sense. Where, say, you've got a population, say in LA, I think like the number of homeless is like 80,000 or something, it might be a lot more. But I mean, that's like 80,000 citizens that you're kind of just leaving nowhere to, with nothing to do. And like I'm not saying that they don't want to, but in a way it's like if they aren't able to take care of themselves, they can't take care of other things. And I think that's important with being in recovery. Like you have to take care of yourself and be grateful for the things that you have, and then afterwards do what you can to take care of other people. But like you said, if you're in a situation where, and I think now obviously it's probably even more important. Like physical health is important, but mental health is extremely important, especially right now where people are under these COVID situations where you're not allowed to basically do what you were doing before. So people are using that as an excuse to be abusive, maybe to themselves or to other people. So yeah, just going down some thought processes I've always had with certain things.
You mentioned the therapy before. What was it called again that you you looked into? I hadn't heard of that.
It wasn't the cryotherapy, right?
Yeah, cryotherapy. Yeah. What is that about?
So it's basically where you go to a chamber, right? And you, I haven't really even watched like a video on it. I was just kind of reading about it, but it kind of looks like the float tanks. Have you ever heard of those where you go in there and they've got like the Epsom salt and you kind of float, but it's like that, like you're basically in a tube and then it just fills up, I guess, with like really cold air or whatever, basically freezing you and to help with whatever issues you might have. But the whole deal with that was, from what I've read, that there's not really any definitive proof that it has any actual benefit for you. So I don't know. That could just be a matter of opinion too, where somebody's got some hand in a pocket where, hey, you know, don't go to him, don't go to them for that, because yeah, it might be $300 a month, but somebody might be taking medication that costs way more than what cryotherapy is costing that will, you know, give them essentially the same benefit and alleviate the same sort of ailments. It's like meditation, you know, it's like, I feel like for myself, if I were on a prescription, like I'd have to be paying for it, versus like meditation is always there. Like I can do it whenever I want to kind of just feel better. And, I don't know. It's interesting, I guess, for me to think about.
I've been doing a lot of the, taking refuge meditations and working with, brainwave optimization healing clinic here at Shambhala Healing Center. Huh. And, at the monastery with crystals and stuff like that. And the guy who runs it was a Navy corpsman, hospital corpsman, during the Vietnam War. So he has, what we have here is a hyperbaric oxygen chamber.
Right.
And
I've
used that.
Heard about it. What is the hyperbaric chamber?
It's like 100% oxygen. You go in there and they shut it for half an hour to an hour, and you're just in a tank like you described, the same kind of a thing, with 100% oxygen. You're just breathing in full oxygen the whole time you're in there. I heard it takes 100 times to really take effect. Like Mark Divine was talking about it with someone on his podcast, and they also talk about CBD meds a lot. People are learning a lot about CBD.
Yeah.
And I can say that it's been very helpful for me with all my diagnoses and all my conditions. CBD is helpful.
Yeah.
There's other derivatives of cannabis that are not so beneficial. Right. Although I don't think any of them hurt me any more than the psychiatric drugs I was on, because those are just horrific.
True. Yeah.
You know, side effects from psychotropic meds are just, I think it's the worst thing you can do for your body. Worst thing on earth.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's definitely, it sounds like a rough way to go. When I was somewhere, I'd gone in to go see somebody, 'cause I was like struggling with something. I think it was like depression or something. And, it sucked for me at the time, because I was like, hey, I have an issue. And then basically the doctor was like, I can either give you medication or I can give you therapy. And I was like thinking to myself, I'm like, what kind of question is that? I was like, where you just flat out offer drugs first versus like carrying the issue. And I think that's where like doing a podcast for myself makes like such a difference, and kind of modeling it after people who I think are important to me. Like I said, like I watch the Joe Rogan podcast constantly. And I think the reason why I'm so drawn to it is because of what I feel like is authenticity. And I guess that's something that's been extremely important to me in like developing this, and just growing it is fun. I'll drop a sponsor. Sorry. Right. I'll drop a sponsor right here. But, developing a podcast and staying authentic in this whole idea has been extremely helpful for me, where just not like feeling like I'm bullshitting people, or like I'm not trying to sell anyone anything. where it's like, oh, hey, buy this product. Like, I think some, and somebody else was asking me this question a little while ago. They're like, what's your plan for this? And I was like, what do you mean? They're like, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to, like, I was like, I don't know. I just do a podcast and I enjoy it. I'm like, that's where I get my enjoyment from, right? So it's like, I feel as though there's so, like you said, there's so many different avenues for therapy that you can go down, where it could just be talking to somebody about your issue, to where it's not, you're not the only person dealing with the issue in your head, to developing some sort of project that you just enjoy working on. Like, it sounds like what you're doing sounds awesome. I was like, wow, it sounds amazing, especially like checking into like the hyperbaric chambers, and just like finding ways to keep yourself busy. And I think that for me is extremely helpful with staying present, staying in recovery as well, where I can actually help other people with the ideas as well. And obviously you can too, with like the ideas you've shared to me have helped me like spiritually, mentally, where I'm like, oh man, this makes this makes sense, where like the ideas make so much sense to me, where I'm actually trying to apply it to my future and where I feel like I need to go. So,
well, I'm glad I could be of service.
Yeah, definitely.
To you.
Yeah. And hopefully I'm being of some service to you.
But, you are.
Yeah. But
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. You're definitely sharing like your ideas on meditation, like what you sent me yesterday. I was like, whoa. I was like, this is cool. I was like, this is like cool, like really cool stuff to go learn about. And I think that's like another thing that that helps me as well, is not feeling like everything's so one dimensional, where you can kind of go into different areas and learn about different things. Something else that
I've been
what were you saying?
So I just followed, what I've been doing lately with the meditations, you know, I did a lot of yoga. And I had some physical limitations from injuries and stuff, you know, and I can move, but, you know, sometimes it hurts me and I feel like I'm doing more damage than good. So recently I got into doing a lot more fine motor skill type things, like doing some welding, doing some work with crystals and wrapping them and stuff. It takes a lot, you know, I have to wear magnifying glass most of the time to see what I'm doing with my hands, which is just so good for the brain. So good for my brain. Anyway. Right.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Yeah.
I think like for what I normally do for work, like as a surgical tech, like I think using my brain and like my frontal cortex is definitely a place where I find enjoyment, where you feel like your focus, and like when you're just focused alone and not kind of drifting off into random thoughts, that your level of happiness, I think definitely you can tell a difference. But there was this course that I was taking, obviously I'm going to keep bringing up these courses that I've taken. It's like not all I can do, but one of the things I've been really drawn to was, it was talking about the difference between focused thinking and diffused thinking, and how the your frontal cortex is only capable of holding about four different ideas at a given time, and that the rear part of your brain basically is where you store all of your long-term memory, all the imagery or whatever, and learning about how to effectively use it can have a pretty big difference. So for myself, and one of the things that it was going into was talking about switching back and forth, basically like consciously switching back and forth. It's crazy. But so for instance, I have a to-do list. Like I make an agenda for myself every day before I go to sleep. I'll say, spend 30 minutes doing this, spend 30 minutes doing this. And it kind of bugs me. I don't know how I feel about it right now, because like one of the things I wrote down on my agenda was do podcast with Brian. So like if I don't do that thing on my to-do list, like I start getting like antsy about it, where I'm like, no, I was like, I said I was going to do it. I was like, I got to check it off. And it's like, now I'm now I kind of feel like I'm playing sort of like a video game where, I guess maybe to where before when I was playing Madden, I'd have a giant to-do list on Madden. You know, when you play like games, it'll say, do this today and do this today and do this today. So it's kind of like the same thing, only, only it's for my actual life. So I'm actually getting something out of it.
Yeah. Jordan Peterson talks about that a lot, about making a list and then just trying to get like 70% of it done, which for me is a lot. Usually, like, it's huge for me if I get 70% done of the 100. And what you're saying is even more interesting, because you're talking about switching back and forth between different parts of the brain, which I hadn't really thought about much. But the fact that you said the frontal cortex?
Yeah, the frontal.
Prefrontal?
Yeah, something, this part, like, right here, I guess. Like, you can tell, like, hey, like, you know, when you're focused on something, like I could tell at least where I can feel blood vessels kind of pumping into that part of my brain, and I feel really focused. It feels kind of cool. I don't know.
That's the part that a lot of the psychiatric drugs and alcohol and other drugs or whatever disable.
Yeah.
It shuts it down so that actually what it's doing is it's shutting down parts of a human being that are natural,
right?
That are meant to flow, like emotions,
right?
And thoughts and things like that that we're having. And a lot of times, guys that are suicidal, you know, 22 a day,
right?
I do 22 burpees every morning. I try to at least, you know, to honor them,
right?
Is you know, they're getting on these medications that are just shutting their brain down, you know. And I don't know that there's like. There's definitely not a simple solution or an easy way to talk about it.
Right.
Very complicated issue, but I know that I've been there, and that was the key, was to get those right.
Yeah.
Juices flowing again, and not to shut off parts of my brain that are normal, and to realize that these emotions that I'm having is a complex set of grief is a complex set of emotions,
right?
That happens in reaction response to a loss, you know, and reacting to those emotions can sometimes get overwhelming, but we've got to remember that the emotions are healthy and they need to be expressed.
Right.
Somehow, if we just shut ourselves down, we might as well kill ourselves. Right. Because like, We're not even human anymore.
Yeah, what's the point
of being a zombie?
Well, I mean, that's like the whole issue with, like, I guess being on your cell phone a lot, where you're just scrolling through Facebook and
going for dopamine hits.
Yeah. Getting all those dopamine overrides where you're just scrolling through. Like I can definitely tell when I'm watching YouTube and 4 hours later I'm like, holy crap, I've done nothing but watch YouTube and just procrastinate. So I've been like limiting the amount of time that I'm actually even looking at my phone, but like, that's why I guess my to-do list has been so important. But basically the way it works is, and you structure it so you avoid procrastinating on any of the things that you're supposed to do. So before you go to sleep, you write the to-do list. So it's like in your brain floating around when you go to sleep. So when you wake up, you're not thinking about each individual task in your head. You're kind of already what they call chunking out each portion or whatever it is that you wrote down in your head. So for myself, and the other thing that it goes into is doing the most difficult task first. So for myself, going and exercising has been probably the hardest thing for me to get a handle on. So as soon as I wake up, get dressed or whatever, go out, get outside, go get some exercise in. And then after that, I'll spend 30 minutes doing that. And then do like, say, like a 5 or 10 minute break in between of just eating or just kind of sitting down for a second. And then after that little bit of time is up, I'll jump into some calculus homework, just get into it. I'll spend another hour doing that. But the important idea with it is that you're not doing get it done, basically, like not writing down, say, do homework, because then you're putting all that pressure on you where you'll blow it off basically of when you're supposed to work on it, versus spending 60 minutes working on it, you're just thinking like, yeah, I don't have to get it done. But as long as I'm looking at it for, I guess, at least 60 minutes and spending some time to try to effectively study, which is where like switching off every like 30 minutes or so and like kind of focusing on another task, or maybe like just taking a minute to like eat something, like drink some water, and then going back into it for another 30 minutes where your brain gets that break, because the front part of your brain, I guess, can only stay focused from what they were saying about 25 minutes or so. And then after that, you'll start to get into this mode where you're in, you're developing an illusion of competency, where you could be reading something and just because you read it, you'll tell yourself like, well, I read it. But if you can't recall the information, then you've not effectively learned it, where that's where breaking it up into, say, 30 minutes of studying or whatever, and just doing a sort of a repetition based sort of studying is a lot more important than saying you did your homework, but if you don't actually understand it, then it's kind of worthless. And I don't know, it's really interesting. Like, I've liked the idea, and it's kind of like weird to me to see all the things that, like, once you cut out that bit of procrastination, how much stuff is able to get done in a day. So, I mean, if you haven't heard of it, I would highly recommend it. Like, my agenda is just chock full every day. Every night before I go to sleep, I'm like, I gotta get this done. I gotta get this done. I'm like, this podcast has to get done. But it's good. I feel like it keeps me motivated. And the other thing that I was gonna get into, I almost missed the idea, but it was going into the idea of process over product. So being more in tune with the process of whatever it is that you're doing than, say, finishing it. So for instance, if you're going on a run and you're more focused on finishing the run rather than enjoying the run for that 30 minutes, that it's less effective. Or if you're studying, for instance, that studying what the process is of learning whatever it is that you're supposed to be learning versus like, oh, hey, I've got to study this so I can get this done, is less effective for you and places basically pressure on you to where you'll procrastinate. And since our bodies are very good at trying to seek out the easiest thing to do, where procrastination is probably one of the easiest things that anyone can do, that you've got to kind of watch out for it. And the other thing with procrastination is that it creates, it gives you like another dopamine reward where, you know, you're putting everything off and you're getting that like short-term dopamine release just because you're able to just sit there and not really do anything that like, that you think you should do or whatever. So I don't know, it's pretty interesting.
Well, that's really helpful to me. I'm going to replay this podcast again and again while I'm studying, so I can,
yeah, for sure,
make sure I'm on track.
Yeah, there was something, it was called the Pomodoro effect, and basically like what you do is you take a timer and you set it to 25 minutes, and once that 25 minutes hits, like while you're studying, then you take that, you say you rest for 10 minutes or whatever, and then turn it back to 25 minutes, start studying again. It's pretty crazy like how well it works. So,
and would you review what you just learned at the end of the 25 minutes, like go back and review it again? Or
yeah,
to break it up like that.
Well, here's what's really helped me, because this is like the idea of mixing in diffused thinking into the whole idea. Like for myself, like I've been terrible at math. Like I struggled through high school. So the fact that I'm getting through any of this is like blowing my mind. But before I go to sleep, I take use of diffused thinking, basically. So, you know, when you go to sleep or whatever, your brain kind of is just not, it's not focused. Obviously you're in a, you know, you're in a dream state, but to read the material before you go to sleep and take it with you into your brain before you go to sleep, lets your brain kind of flow and kind of put its idea around whatever it is, or its idea around the concept and trying to form solutions for whatever it is that you're trying to understand. And I think like that's been helpful, But the other thing too that helps with studying also that they were extremely persistent on talking about was the ability to actually recall whatever it is that you're studying. So just like I said, just reading something, or just say you're highlighting something, like say you highlighted a whole page, you'll think to yourself, well, I highlighted it, I'll know it, but that's not going to be as effective as your ability to actually recall whatever it is that you understood. And something else that it goes into was being able to recall the information in different rooms. So say you studied something, right? And you say you, it's something that you actually have to know. Something that you can do is try going into a different room and try recalling whatever it is that you just studied. And that the more you can recall something in a different environment shows that your understanding of it is better. And so that was a pretty cool concept. And then another concept that they were talking about was using your imagery, like your brain's ability to hold images. So say you're trying to hold a name in your memory, right? And I'm really bad at this. When somebody tells me their name immediately, like I'll forget it. I'm like, crap. But what you're supposed to do is take the name, basically. If you can write it down, do it within like 30 seconds or whatever. But if you can't do that, take the name and then use, if you can imagine, basically in your brain, where you're in your house or your memory palace, and you could take that name and blow it up into, say, massive letters of, you know, epic proportions, and just lay it out, and then just imagine like that person's name in massive letters sitting in a room somewhere. Like that idea of that image will hold a lot stronger than just trying to, you know, memorize something verbally and using basically your focused thinking, where, you know, your brain can supposedly only hold four things at once versus your long-term memory can hold a lot more, and it can hold things really well when it comes to remembering images or using imagery to remember something.
Wow, that's amazing. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah.
For telling me that. I've always had a problem remembering people's names. It's one of the biggest things I struggle with, and I know it's so rude, you know?
Yeah.
And it really doesn't help build relationships at all.
No. Yeah, no, for sure. I don't know. It's crazy. Like, I think now, like, I got into a conversation with somebody online about this, but they made a comment. It was about healthcare and how healthcare needs reform. And I kind of argued with, like, the idea of, like, doing universal healthcare is not probably the best idea, in my opinion, because I think that the government in general doesn't handle like anything really well.
Yeah,
so it's like, and it's the same with education. I feel like with like our public education system's trashed, but at the same time, I think that what you pay for your education, like it's a total difference, you know, like for myself, when I was going to college and like paying for the classes that I wanted to take, it was like, it was so much different than, you know, elementary school or high school or whatever. I'm like, these classes are trash. It's like the bottom of the barrel of crap that they just feed you, like scraps of information, to where if you're in a college class where these people are paid really good money and you're paying good money, you're going to get more out of it. So something that like I was taking right now, I'm taking a course on iPhone programming because I'm trying to learn how to develop apps because I think it has some use in the market. But I was talking about how our education institutions are going to get slaughtered by like this new ability to learn things where you don't have to go into, say, $50,000 of college debt, where you could just say, do a program that'll teach you everything online and basically do everything that you need, teach you everything that you need to learn and get you up to speed. And you're gaining way more value from it. And I don't know. I think it's crazy to think about. And I was listening to somebody else talk about this. I think it was Mark Cuban, where he was talking about, if you see these colleges trying to expand and build a bunch of different buildings or whatever, that you have to be worried about it for some reason to where they're spending all this money to grow or whatever. And I couldn't understand why, but I think that maybe some of that has to do with like the fact that the internet can expand so quickly and develop things that'll just put other businesses like straight out of commission. I mean, we're seeing it now with e-commerce, with Amazon, just basically, you know, destroying any of these like tiny shops, like small businesses where it's like extremely hard to compete with them. But something else I was going to get into, I was learning about with Google, I guess they're putting out these professional certificates and they're coming out with like four different professional certificates. One of them's like project manager, one's like UX designer or something, but they're basically just certificates that you're supposedly able to get within a 6 month time frame. But Google is also going to look at these certificates as a 4-year degree because that to them probably is going to be more helpful anyways, because I don't think that these colleges can keep up with how quickly like they need to grow. And I think you would probably be able to agree with that too, with like what you're learning. Like it needs to be ready for the market like now. Like it can't be behind 6 months or even a year. Like it's extremely important.
I'm doing an income sharing agreement with Next Generation Training, and my instructor is actively training Marines and sailors at the same time. So I'm sure whatever he's doing is up to date, you know?
Right. Yeah. And it's not like a traditional college, right? It's more of like, here's what you really need to know to actually do what you need to do in the workplace.
Yeah. Get the job done.
Yeah.
It was started by some guys from the Air Force, instructors who wanted to do civilian training. And then they started this company, Next Generation.
It's crazy. I mean, it's cool that you're doing that, but it's crazy that like, say when you graduate high school, nobody's giving you a real good idea of what money is. So you have these predatory college loans, in my opinion, that are willing to sink, you know, an 18-year-old kid in $50,000 worth of government backed loans.
Yeah.
Sad.
It with the VLANs and stuff that we put up, you know, you can have a virtual college campus and just have it be way more efficient, way more green, way more good for the environment, you know, and sustainability wise, you know, we only have so much time to reverse that curve, you know, of where the environment's going, and we cannot be wasting all this money on fossil fuels that it takes just to get the kids to school.
Yeah.
How far you got to drive, you know, how many cars are going to park in the parking lot on a college campus. It's inefficient and it's wasteful.
Yeah. But I think at the same time, could you imagine like, what would happen if say, well, I mean, it is happening, I think, personally. Like, I think it's like an invisible burst right now that nobody's seeing, where you're just seeing the actual value of these college degrees just going away to nothing. And especially now, after we've seen these scandals, these college scandals, where people are just paying to get their kids in, it's like, okay, so this person's in this academic institution that was basically had their way paid in, which in my opinion takes away from the actual prestige of it, you know? So it's like, you don't actually have to know anything to obtain this. So to me, I'm thinking, where's the value in it? I'm like, there's no value in something that can essentially just be bought. In my opinion, I feel as though that definitely hurts them. But also say we do move all online, like these teachers, like these educators are going to have some serious competition, because for me, I'm thinking in my head, what am I going to spend all my time learning? This is how I am now anyways, but how would I spend how would I allocate my most valuable asset, which is time? And I think that for some of the things that an institution might want to teach you, like for instance, say something that you really don't think that you need to know about. that you could essentially learn on your own with YouTube, say, sorry to say, but like something like liberal arts, right? Yeah. So most of these topics you can go on to YouTube and get your own idea of it pretty well padded down. But say like I need something that will make me money, right? Am I going to spend time on learning about liberal arts, or would I sit down and spend my couple of hours that I have learning about, say, currency trading? You could do stocks, bond trading, or whatever, and you don't even have to pay anything to learn about it. So I don't know. It's crazy. It's such a crazy time just to be alive and to kind of just see everything, like how it's all unfolding.
I like the income sharing agreement, you know, that I have now, because like, I don't pay anything until I get a job and I'm making money. I think the cutoff was like $40,000 a year. So if I can go through all this training and I can, you know, wash back if I fail the cohort or whatever, it literally for 7 years, I could go through this and never have to pay a dime, never have to pay a dollar for anything until they have completed, you know, training me and I'm the finished product and I can go out there and get a job and do the work, which I expect will happen in the next 6 months to a year, because I am doing very well in the class. And I like my instructor. I'm in there with people who have master's degrees, you know, veterans from the different branches of the armed forces, and they're all struggling just as much as I am. So he's kind of really putting it on us. Like, it's almost like when, like drown proofing or something, you know?
Yeah.
They dump that much information on you, and it's just like you find out that you can survive. You know, you have to suffer through it, but you will survive it. And
yeah, I think that's a really good thing for me. I think it's also a good field now, especially with like what's going on now with how people are pretty much interacting right now socially. Everything's done through computer. So I think any field in that is just, it's going to be in way higher demand than I think people might be realizing, where, you know, you need somebody who can program and then you need somebody who can protect the programming. So it's like, that's going to go way up, especially now. Like I said, everything's done, like all these social interactions are done through this. So it's crazy. It's just like a crazy changing environment. I think something else that would be worth keeping an eye on, if anybody else is listening, is the idea of how this whole cryptocurrency is working right now with like Bitcoin. And if you haven't paid,
have you had any success with that?
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
your knowledge about it.
Say it again. Yeah. No, you can definitely.
What do you know?
Okay. So here's what I know about cryptocurrency. One, you can make it, like you can mine it on your own, or you can buy it and hold it. So it depends on like what's more cost effective. You can either have your computer run off of basically like have your computer run all day and just mine basically all day, but your ability to profit off of it is largely going to depend on your efficiency of running the computer. So if you have, say, a house, like a tiny house set up with solar paneling or like hydroelectricity, where you aren't paying anything for electricity and you can just basically mine the cryptocurrency, your ability to stay profitable is a lot higher than, say, if you're paying an average rate for electricity, then you're going to struggle. So you can go that route where you're basically building a mining farm. And there are companies that are massive that are getting into this, like, China's really big into cryptocurrency right now. Like they run like the biggest like cryptocurrency mining farms, but also like we have people in the US right now who are developing these farms, and you can check it out in Texas or wherever, where they're opening up these big, huge plants and they're developing these like miners specifically just to mine Bitcoin. Like it's a massive industry. Like I don't think most people are sitting around thinking like, you know, I wonder if there's just some big monstrosity that somebody is investing billions of dollars in just to invest into Bitcoin right now. I wish I could pull the article up, but so you could.
I read a lot about that too.
Yeah,
and that was my goal. It's one of my, you know, plans in life for retirement, really, is to build a little farm, you know, go back to the agrarian kind of a lifestyle that we're used to living in as human beings. It's been very healthy, you know, the paleo caveman type, you know, life, but then integrate the technology into it with the Internet of Things. And the way to do that would be mining Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You know, so you'd have your little Earth ship with your,
see, that's what I was thinking. That's how I thought that the project would work and stay profitable, to where, like, you wouldn't need too much. Like, if the government decided to assist you with it, great. But I think that if you could build out, somebody's probably going to listen and be like, oh, I'm doing this, but whatever. Great. If they do it,
everybody's going to be doing it. This is the way of the future. There's no other way. I'm totally agreeing with you.
Like, but I think doing like an Earthship home and then just having like a cryptocurrency farm just laid out on top of it would make basically, it would basically complete the idea of being self-sustainable, because really nobody needs to give you money to run it. But two, the people that are living there, you know, if everything's self-sustaining where you're growing like a garden or they're able to meditate, all the electricity is provided as well. I feel like you're kind of fixing a lot of problems, but I'm sure there's a bunch of loopholes too. You've got to jump through with like, just how to structure it correctly, especially if like you were thinking like you wanted government assistance. I don't know if they'd be as helpful with you if they.
I don't think so. No, I'm with you as far as having the government not involved in healthcare. Well, there is the competition aspect, so I don't see why it has to be either or. It could be both. Like, we could have a baseline, and we do. We have a baseline, you know, safety net, social safety net already in this country. I think other countries are doing a better job with it, so we could have that and make it better, have some kind of universal healthcare type plan for the people who can't afford healthcare and never will be able, whatever. And then also have all the options for private healthcare as well. It doesn't need to be either or. It can be both. And when it's both, it'll run much better. So yeah, we could be getting government subsidies for having a crypto mine and electrical, you know, solar power, wind power, water, whatever we can do, and get tax breaks or government subsidies or,
yeah, you know, there's a website, it's called grants.gov, and I was looking it up, but I'm sure, like, you know, like I feel like my idea is well-intentioned, to where like, it's more about this problem that I keep hearing about that I want to take care of, that I just realize that I'm like, this is going to take me so much effort to do, but it's important to me also, I guess. But I'm sure there's definitely people out there who are going after these grants who aren't so well-intentioned, just to use it for their like own personal selfish motives. I think as long as you're doing it for altruistic reasons, I think you can do okay with it. And, you know, I feel as though doing something that actually matters and helps people. But yeah, that's where that whole idea, I guess, like where it helped me, where I was like, oh man, these Earthship things are real. I'm like, man, you could definitely mine cryptocurrency. The only downside now, though, is with cryptocurrency is that it's extremely expensive to get into now. Like, you've got to have a lot of money to like just get into it. Like, just like for myself, I was playing around with they're called the ASIC machines, and those are basically the computers that I was telling you about. I spent maybe like $100 on one, like a cheap one, just to see if I could set it up, see if like my internet was powerful enough, see what like my electricity bill was like at the end of the month. It definitely spiked my energy usage, but the machines now that are profitable are still like crazy, like how much it can fluctuate in your profitability per day. Like it'll go from, say, $20 of profit a day, and this is off like a $3,000 machine, to it can just get whacked and drop to, say, nothing, like, say, negative $1.50 after you take account for electricity, for what you're paying for electricity and whatever else. But yeah, so it was pretty interesting to bring up.
Yeah, I like the crypto machines, man. I'm into that.
Yeah. But yeah, so I've been spending like a lot of time learning about currency, like cryptocurrency. I started spending some time learning about Forex because like I knew about it and I still know about it, but I feel like my issue is that like I don't really use it, you know, like I have knowledge that I don't use, which sometimes bothers me. I was reading this one article on the internet and it was called The Five Pillars of Wealth. And I don't know, I was thinking about the idea and like one of the ways it, like there's like five pillars. One of it is building, investing in yourself, basically doing personal investing. The second way is asset protection, and then like time allocation or money allocation or whatever. So I don't know, it was pretty interesting to pull up and learn about. But yeah, so
you know, when you mentioned alternatives and we had started the podcast, the sober about sobriety, there's like a couple of alternatives to traditional 12-step that I found really helpful. I mean, one of them is called Hip Sobriety or something like that. There's a website out there.
Huh. I'll check it out.
Yeah, I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd definitely be cool to check out. Yeah, so I was going to get into that whole idea. Like, I changed the name because I had issues with just running it, I guess. It's kind of weird because I wanted the Instagram handle pretty bad, but somebody already has it, and they're already doing pretty well with it, so it was hard for me to get it off of them. And then I just decided to just use my own name. And I'm like, well, at the end of the day, like there's some benefits to it where it's like whatever content that I'm putting out, like it has my name on it. So it's like, I got to put out what I think is good because it's going to reflect on me. And then, two, that.
Well, Sherwin's a great name, right?
Yeah.
Sherwin.
Yeah. But,
you're winning for sure. Right.
Right. Cool. But, the other thing was, running a brand requires a lot of effort. Like even just doing like your own thing, right? Like even just say, if you were just to do a vlog, a podcast, like that alone takes effort. Like for me, like it takes me like time to figure out how to set up all the podcasts. Like right now, I think I've got it down pretty pat, the whole process of getting it down. But, like to run an actual brand requires a lot of money as well. And I'm not really in a position to sit there and risk, say, $10,000 or $15,000 just to get something off the ground where, like, I'm already as busy as I am now. So I like to kind of take smart choices with where I approach my time. Like I said, I've spent a lot of time, like, learning and studying about finance. And one of the most interesting books that I guess – it had a big impact on Warren Buffett, but it's called The Intelligent Investor. And it goes into basically the two different types of investors. Like you have a speculator and then you have speculation and then you have actual investing. So investing would be, say, if you bought stock in Amazon or Nike or Coca-Cola, like, you know, those companies are pretty solid in that the value of them is always going to grow over time, versus speculation, where you could look at a company like, or say there's a new drug trial out, this company is getting ready to launch that they think is going to go to the moon, it's going to solve everything, and you put money into that, and that's speculation because, you know, nothing's really tested and proven true in how effective or how successful they are, it could basically be like penny stocks, where you're speculating on penny stocks because they're so volatile, where it can fluctuate and go wherever. So, yeah.
I don't know much about investing. I tried
yeah.
a lot. and I haven't had much success with it, but I'm open to learning.
Yeah, the most exciting thing to me that I've learned about other than cryptocurrency is I hate saying it because now you have so many people out there who are trying to sell basically a pyramid scheme on it, but it's called Forex trading, and you don't have to pay anyone to learn. Like, whatever you guys do, if anybody's listening, like, don't pay anybody to go learn about Forex. But there's a website, it's called Baby Pips, like baby, B-A-B-Y, Pips, P-I-P-S.com. And they have a little academy that'll basically run you through, like, exactly how it works. Like, what you have to download, what you have to use, how you open up accounts, like, what's a stop loss, what's a take profit. And, you know, they can obviously explain it way better than I can. But something that I was kind of learning a lot about was basically what you do is you buy currency at a lower value compared to the US dollar. So you'll buy it, hold it for a little while, and then wait until the value goes up, say due to current events of whatever is going on in that country, whether it's positive or negative. If it's positive, you take profit. Or if, like, you start losing and it's more than you feel comfortable with losing, then you stop, you take what's called a stop loss, or you sell it, you short it. So that's probably been, like, my most favorite thing to learn about. And you can also, if you guys are trying to learn about it, use, they're called practice platforms, where you're basically doing paper trading, where it's a pretend account, where instead of trading with actual money, you're trading with a fake fixed amount, but it's still based on the market. And you basically just sit there and play in the water with it, with, like, setting stop losses, setting take profits. And you can also download what's called Forex signals that'll tell you when to buy something and when to sell it according to professional analysts. And you can trust them if you want, or if you're doing your own research on that particular currency, then you can go in on it with what you feel comfortable with. So it's pretty interesting. I learned about this from somebody in a weird way. Like, I was flying back from Hawaii, right? I got bumped up to first class because I messed up. I didn't check in like I was supposed to. And I was sitting next to this lady on this plane, and I was reading this book. And just trying to, like, get better with finance. I was like, all of my time is being, I'm trying to, you know, spend all my time as productively as possible. So I was trying to study on about finance in between my time of doing other things. But she was talking to me about it. She's like, check out Forex. You go on babypips.com and just basically, like, you go from there. And, like, that's where I learned about it. Like, I learned about it way before Instagram or any of these people who are going out there trying to, like, sell these memberships. They're basically pyramid schemes. Like, my cousin is involved in one, and I kind of yelled at him about it. But basically, like, what happens with this pyramid scheme is that you spend, say, $300 a month, and they give you courses that are, you know, whatever, to learn about Forex. But you can also make money by recruiting other people into this basically pyramid scheme and getting them to spend their $200 a month or whatever. And the more people you recruit, the more money that you make. So your actual money that you're making isn't made off of Forex itself. It's made off of a pyramid scheme where you're recruiting people into this program of whatever it is. I don't know what's going on, but I called my cousin out on it, and I warned everyone in, like, my family to watch out for him. So I was like, don't, whatever you do, do not pay somebody to learn about Forex. You can literally learn it on your own. You don't have to pay anybody a dime to learn about it. And the more you understand it, like, the more you're going to be able to, like, sniff out, like, what somebody else might not know. Like, I brought up babypips.com, and he's like, I crap all over Baby Pips. And I was like, wait a minute. I was like, this doesn't make sense. I was like, Baby Pips is like a learning website where you go to learn. And he's talking about it as if it's a team. I'm like, this guy does not know what he's talking about, man. So I don't know. I feel like it's cool when you know if somebody knows what they're talking about, or if you kind of know what you're talking about, or don't know. Hopefully when you asked me what I know about cryptocurrency, it sounded authentic. I mean, I've done research into it and I've learned a few things about it. I wouldn't say I'm like ready to retire over it. I would just say like I'm at least knowledgeable in it and how it works.
I just like that you have the same vision as I do, wanting to have a sustainable Earthship environment with some crypto mines, you know, running on the property, and yeah. That's pretty much it. You never have to leave if you've, you know, we're in a situation like we're in now where
it wouldn't matter.
You can't get out. There's no stores, you know, everything that you need to survive is right there and indefinitely off the grid. Well, it's not really off the grid entirely, but if you had to go off the grid, you could, and you'd survive.
Yeah. I've been pricing land out for that too. I think I'm trying to be careful though of where I'd wind up with it, because kind of my obligations right now, I can't go so far. I think at this point I'm just building up the idea and working on it. So when I can employ everything that I've built up around it, it'll work hopefully more effective. So
it's really hard to find land and survive, you know, on it, because Northern in California, we got all the fires, everything's heating up.
Yeah.
Big cities, you know, Phoenix and whatnot are going to be like 115 degrees soon.
To the flip side of Arizona, I mean, like I've done some research into Arizona and their land. Like there's two sides of it. Like one is that solar power gets the most bang for its buck there because it's so hot, obviously, like out of anywhere else in the country, you do better there than anywhere else. But there's probably three more or two more things to it. But two is that you have to watch out for the flooding with like how things rain. And then three, all the the criminal activity and stuff, I think is something that I'd have to be wary of. So
I just want to surf. I like surf, you know.
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu, San Diego, a nice town to live in.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's so hard to... San Diego's such a nice place to leave or to live in. Like, I'm from the East Coast originally, and, like, the weather here makes such a difference in my ability to breathe. So, the lack of, like, humidity, I guess, for me is good. Like, the dryness. I know, like a lot of people hate the dryness in the air. I'm like, this is perfect. I'm like... I can breathe all year round. I never have to struggle with it. So
I grew up in New England and it's just, you know, suicidal every time that it's you hit that 6 months and it's not even that bad. It's not like Alaska or anything or parts of Northern Canada where it's just, you never see the sun almost, but you get February, March comes around and it's just like every, I don't know how many days of darkness in a row where it's just gray skies, cold, ice falling out on your head, you know, and
yeah,
I now that I have some disciplines and techniques that I learned, basically I was saying through my severe psychiatric struggles, I feel like I could go back there now and probably be fine.
Yeah,
because I have like the Wim Hof type stuff we were talking about early on, the ice bath, the cold dip in the morning, all of that. That kind of stuff just regulates your body and puts you in a state where you can deal with that kind of, and I'm not going to say I would enjoy it all the time, but I think I could survive it now and not go into those extreme states of like suicidal depression, despair, and, you know, wanting to kill myself all day long just because of the, you know, the sky or whatever.
Yeah.
The grayness.
Yeah, I don't know. I think for myself, if I ever go back, it would be probably because I had to and not because I wanted to, which is kind of, I feel like it's kind of rough to say, but I don't know. I feel like this area is, I don't know, I've grown attached to it just with like the people I've met and I don't know. I feel like for me personally, I've probably still have quite a few people that I've pissed off. They might not remember. They might remember for sure. So I guess I'm giving myself some time between me and that area before I decide on going back.
Yeah, the Pacific Northwest is beautiful, but there's so much violence, like you said, the crime up there. I wouldn't go there right now.
Yeah.
Northern California is nice. I'm in Northern.
Yeah.
I like the climate here.
Yeah. No, it looks like an attractive place. So, anyways, this is a good podcast, man. It's definitely deepening my thought process about things. But I'll definitely give your meditation recommendations. I'll check those out. Is there anything else you want to share?
Well, just thanks for having me on, and thanks for your service, Dave. You know, I know you do a lot for this country, and I don't know if you get thanked every day, but I'd like to be one. Thank you today.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Definitely, I'd definitely be interested in having you on again in the future. Sounds like we have the same idea now with the whole Earthship and cryptocurrency. So, but yeah.
I think maybe I'll bring some friends or something. I got some other guys in recovery that, you know, have a lot more experience than I do. And, you know, like I shared with you before a little bit about who they are. So they might like to get on.
Yeah, for sure.
With you and talk about this stuff.
Yeah, for sure, man. All right, guys. I'll leave Brian's social media stuff in the description. Is there anywhere where you'd like anyone to follow you at for like social media platforms?
I try to stay off social media as much as I can.
All right, man. All right, so
good.
There's Brian. Thanks for joining us. I'll leave some information about the Earthship stuff in the description and maybe some of the information regarding the meditation as well. You can follow me at davidjsherwin.com on Instagram, davidjsherwin, and basically anywhere else. Hope everyone's doing well on the Saturday, and I'll see you guys all soon.
Thank you, sir.
All right,
have
man.
A good day.
You too. Cool.